The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
First of all, I suppose I should say a happy Independence Day to all our American listeners, be they here, there or yon. And as Americans celebrate the 4th of July with many events marking the 250th anniversary of the creation of that country, their founding ideals of liberty, democracy and freedom are once again taking center stage. But there's another story running through America's history, and not one of peace interrupted by war, but of a nation shaped by almost continuous conflict. David Vine is the author of The United States of War, subtitled A Global History of America's Endless Conflicts from Columbus to the Islamic State. And he argues that war has become deeply embedded not only in American foreign policy, but in its politics, its economy and its national identity. So as the U.S. reflects on 250 years of independence, has the culture of perpetual war become one of the defining features of the American experience? David Vine joins me now from California as the celebrations move from the East Coast to the West. David, good morning and welcome and a happy 4th of July.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to speak with you. It's a difficult day to entirely embrace the happy 4th of July, but I feel very lucky to have a chance to talk together.
Now, the United States, you say, has been at war for most of its 250 years. Why?
It's a darn good question, and I've been dedicating a lot of my working life to answering that question. We can quickly dispense of any idea that U.S. wars have been inevitable or it's somehow baked into the DNA of the country. I think the easiest way, and surely many in Ireland can understand, to understand the history of endless wars that the United States has been fighting since independence, almost without cessation, is to understand that, of course, the United States is a country that won its independence in a war with Britain. It freed itself from the British Empire and very much inherited the imperial roots of the British Empire. It was a war not just for freedom or democracy, as some of the myth would have it, but it was a war for imperial control and control over imperial mechanisms that enabled the United States to expand as an empire across the North American continent and then eventually to expand beyond North America to conquer and control lands around the world, to become ultimately a global empire.
Now, I would invite our listeners to maybe Google and have a look at all the wars that the United States has been involved in since its foundation. I'll just throw a few countries that were affected. Well, Tripoli, which is in Libya, 1801, Haiti, Mexico, Sumatra in 1832, war against Great Britain itself in 1812, Hawaii, 1893, the Spanish Civil War, 1818 to 1902, and so on and so forth, and many wars against Native Americans.
Exactly right. Virtually the entire 19th century and most of the late 18th century after the United States won its independence from the British Empire was fighting a long series of wars against Native American peoples and nations. And those were just some of the wars. At the same time, the United States invaded Canada on 11 separate occasions, invaded Mexico on 10 occasions, and took almost half of Mexico's territory, which is part of how I'm sitting now in the United States, living in California and not in Mexico, or for that matter, in Spain, or of course, this is ultimately occupied native lands. We could spend the rest of the interview reading the more than 135 different nations and peoples that the United States military has fought wars with or engaged in some form of combat with. Many, of course, are most focused, as we should be, on the last now almost 25 years of war since the George W. Bush administration launched its so-called war on terror. And in many ways, that is exactly why the United States is involved in yet another endless war, hopefully not endless completely, but the current war in Iran is a product of both the George W. Bush administration's war on terror and a product of this much longer history of U.S. wars dating to independence. And that's why I do think it is important to see Donald Trump as not exceptional at all in the broad swath of U.S. history, but as very much a product of U.S. history. He is an extreme version of a kind of U.S. imperial presidency. In many ways, he's taking the presidency back to the 19th century and the blatant kind of imperialism that didn't have any of the trappings of, you know, fighting wars for peace and democracy and freedom. He just does it. And
yeah, because looking at some of the titles given to the operations, I mean, in Somalia, Operation Restore Hope. In Haiti, in 1994-95, Operation Uphold Democracy. Operation Urgent Fury was to remove U.S. medical students from Grenada. I remember that invasion by, it was ordered by Ronald Reagan, as far as I remember. But the idea that America was a force for good was something that we all believed in the post-war years, that America basically was our pal. But maybe what Trump has done is simply revealed what the U.S. is now and has always been for a long time, a self-interested imperialist.
I think that's right. I think it is more complicated because, of course, there are trends in U.S. history that have inspired people around the world, including the what we are celebrating today. The Declaration of Independence is a document that proved inspirational to others who went on to free themselves from imperial and colonial rulers. The very freedom that U.S. citizens won from the British Empire was an inspiration to others throughout the Americas in particular to wage revolutions that led to their freedom. And of course, you know, the United States has at times been a force for good of some kinds and then for some degree of spreading democracy, just for example. But of course, these are largely the myths that all of us grew up with, certainly here in the United States, that I very much believed when I began my research for my book, The United States of War. I thought of the endless wars fought since the George W. Bush administration invaded Afghanistan and then Iraq as exceptional. And I really needed to deprogram myself from the kind of indoctrination I had grown up with to see the ways in which war is a foundational part of the United States and has shaped my life profoundly and the life of everyone in the United States.
And yet every generation has a memory of a war. I mean, there's the World War II generation, just sticking with more recent times rather than going back further. The World War II generation, then you had the Korean War in the 50s. You had the Vietnam War in the 60s, ending in the early 70s, and so on into our own time with those Gulf Wars. And the cost for America has been quite profound.
The costs have been extraordinarily profound. Of course, the costs in places like Korea and Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran and Gaza and Somalia and Yemen and Libya, and we could go on. The costs there have been far, far worse, far, far graver. Just looking at the post-2001 wars, according to the Costs of War Project from Brown University, 4.5 million people are estimated to have died in the most violent of U.S. wars since 2001. 4.5 million people dying in direct combat and in indirect ways because of the destruction of health systems and food supplies and the like. 4.5 million people, tens of millions of people displaced, upwards of 38 million displaced as of 2021 alone in the post-2001 wars, tens of millions injured, and the costs, the financial costs in the United States have been astronomical, really a sum that cannot be understood without tremendous effort. $8 trillion have been expended or will be expended by the United States to fight the wars since 2001 in Iraq, Afghanistan, overlapping war in Pakistan and Yemen, in Libya and beyond.
Now, in terms of the death toll of Americans, it's been, I suppose, compared to the millions who died in wars that America was involved in those territories, the death toll has been relatively small, in the tens of thousands of Americans. But 1.7 million veterans with disabilities, amputees, people with mental health problems, and so on and so forth. That is a high cost for a society to pay.
It's an extraordinarily high cost. And we need to, of course, also think about the loved ones, the family members of everyone who's been killed or has been grievously injured. And I do think it's important to pay equal attention to all the lives lost. The numbers become so large, it actually becomes rather dehumanizing when we, especially if one seeks to compare the numbers killed here from the numbers killed there. Indeed, tens of thousands of U.S. military personnel and U.S. military contractors have died, well over a million serious injuries, including traumatic brain injuries. And it's actually an Irish poet, Pedrigo Tuma, who has a beautiful poem that remains haunting to me, where he talks about learning to count as a child and emphasizes the importance of paying attention to one life, one life, one life, one life, one life, he repeats. And that's an important part of how I try to pay attention to the human suffering that, of course, is at the core of war, wherever it is waged.
Now, there's another element to this. Those trillions of dollars that have been spent and will be spent on wars and the war machines, the military-industrial complex and so on, had those trillions been spent elsewhere? On healthcare, for example, could we have universal healthcare in America, as we have in most of the civilized Western world? Education could be improved. Instead of massive student loans, students could get grants to get higher education. We all see when we visit the United States some of the crumbling infrastructure. So many things could have been done with that money.
It can make one weep. It should make one weep, I think, especially for those of us here in the United States, to think of what we could have done with upwards of $8 trillion U.S. dollars. Indeed, as you said, we could have made healthcare universal in this country. We could have ensured that no one would sleep on the street, as so many do in our country, that no one goes hungry. The myth of the United States, of course, revolves around its greatness as a nation. But if you look closely, you see all the ways in which our society is so profoundly fragile and falling apart in so many ways. And it simply doesn't have to be this way. Because of the money that we have available to us, we could be spending it differently. And I think it's important to point to the money in another sense, to go back to your first question about why all these wars. One of the major reasons we have this long pattern of endless war is because it has been so damn profitable for so many. Ultimately, not that many. It's been profitable for some very powerful weapons manufacturers and other Pentagon contractors, and for the powerful people who control those companies. But for the populace as a whole in the United States, the spending on war, the wasting of trillions of dollars on war has come at the expense of our health, our daily lives, our well-being in so many ways.
Now, the problem, I suppose, with the United States narrative is one of, you know, stars in the Wild West with the gunslingers and the cowboys and Indians story, which we grew up with. You can't say Indians anymore, you say Native Americans. But it does really begin with a genocide.
Indeed, the wars were not just wars in the late 18th and 19th centuries. These were genocidal wars that were fought against Native American peoples and nations. And that genocidal history remains with the United States. There are direct ties between those genocidal wars and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And of course, U.S. support and participation in the genocide in Gaza, the kind of racism that underlies the U.S. wars in the greater Middle East, and of course, in the genocide against Palestinians. These are connections that we must reckon with, especially on a day like this, that in the United States, the day where we celebrate independence really should be a day of reckoning with the full complexity of U.S. history, including its genocidal history.
The problem with being involved in imperial wars, it brings people to far-flung places around the world, and they come back with so attitudes towards the people they met there. For example, you know, they talk about Arabs as ragheads. You've got President Trump himself being very derogatory about Somalis. And that kind of inculcates maybe more racism than ever in parts of the American population.
Absolutely. And racism, of course, is a deep vein in U.S. history, also dating to independence and before independence. And it has shaped where the United States has fought its wars and where it hasn't. And it, as a result of the wars being waged and so many millions being deployed to fight them, has only fueled racism that indeed U.S. military personnel have brought back with them, and fueling racism further in this country. Of course, many U.S. military personnel have come back from war radicalized, and rather than more racist, they've come back seeing the country with different eyes and understanding it differently, and come to lead struggles for freedom and struggles against racism and struggles to end U.S. wars. Indeed, today there'll be a major march in Philadelphia where the Declaration of Independence was signed, a march led by veterans against fascism. This is the kind of tradition that we also can celebrate on the July 4th, the day where we commemorate the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It can be a day to reinvigorate a kind of revolutionary fervor and a demand for independence and freedom, especially freedom from the new fascist and authoritarian leader we have in the White House. That is certainly my hope for today, that it will fuel struggles to rebuild democracy in this country.
Finally, your book, United States of War, was published just a few months before the current Middle East wars, which followed on from the events of October the 7th, 2023. We're now seeing very visibly how the affairs of Israel and the United States appear to be inextricably bound at the cost of the war of choice, which was prompted by Netanyahu. Do you think the exposition of all of that is going to change America's direction?
I think the country's direction is changing profoundly and in many ways for the better when it comes to the relationship with Israel. There is widespread dissatisfaction with the U.S. relationship with Israel now across the political spectrum, especially in the Democratic Party. It seems the overwhelming majority is now critical of Israel. And in the Republican Party as well, especially on the farther right, for complicated reasons and with complicated effects, there's widespread criticism of Israel and the U.S.-Israeli relationship. So that is actually changing for the better, although there are, of course, deep roots that maintain a deep alliance between the United States and Israel that still need to be uprooted to ensure that the United States government stops sending bombs and missiles and drones to Israel and supporting its war machine, its genocidal war machine. But again, I am quite hopeful. The shift in public opinion when it comes to supporting Israel is one of many reasons I'm quite hopeful, but I think Trump alone provides a tremendous opportunity because of the way in which people have reached new levels of dissatisfaction and anger about U.S. wars. People in the United States have been sick of endless wars for years, dating to relatively early in the U.S. war in Iraq. In fact, Trump won the presidency on two occasions in no small part because he portrayed himself as the anti-war president, as the peace president. And then, of course, especially in this term in office, he's turned around and done the exact opposite and embraced the deepest imperial roots of the United States and war-making, war-mongering of the United States. But this has made the U.S. and Israeli war in Iran less popular than any U.S. war in recent history, and I think provides an opportunity, as does the entire Trump presidency, to profoundly change the direction of the country and make sure that this war in Iran is the last war the United States fights.
David Vine, author of The United States of War, A Global History of America's Endless Conflicts from Columbus to the Islamic State. David, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.